Then, as we move on, you met Wes.
After John's passing, about 9 months later, I was at an event, and John pointed at Wes and said, "This guy will take care of you. Get to know him." John was already deceased, but he was pointing him out to me as a spirit.
Okay. After he died, you could sense John telling you, "That man over there will take care of you."
Yes, yes.
What did you do then? Did you go over and talk to him?
We talked, and then a mutual friend happened to invite us to go see a play together. We started talking, and, you know.
Was this in Tulsa?
Yes. Well, he was actually living in Tahlequah at the time.
And what was his profession?
He worked at the School of Optometry for Northeastern State University.
Did he do some ministerial work?
Yes, as a lay Presbyterian minister. And has a church that he's been involved in for many years in Park Hill, Oklahoma, which is near Tahlequah.
How long after you and Wes got together that one day something strange seemed to feel funny to you?
Well, it was oddly again in November of 2013, I started feeling my foot dragging, my left foot dragging. I thought I better go get this checked out, so I went to see a neurologist that I'd dealt with for years. He said, "Well, I'd like for you to go see a neurosurgeon." So I saw him, and I was having felicitations too, which are muscle twitches all over the body, which is one of the symptoms of ALS. Now, I knew something was up, and I could tell that that's what they were thinking, but they did want to diagnose me because I'd also had peripheral neuropathy in my feet for about 10 years at that point, and they said it's kind of unusual to have both conditions.
Were you diabetic?
No.
Neuropathy normally is associated with that, and you had it, and you weren't diabetic.
I wasn't diabetic. So Dr. Dunaway, my chief neurologist, said, "I think you need to go to Dr. Alan Pastronk at Washington University in St. Louis, because he's the top neurologist, in my opinion, in the country." So called January 1st after they got back from their Christmas break, and they said, "Well, the first appointment he has available is April the 7th. I went, "Oh, I have to wait, you know, that long to even get in to see him." There's an MDA ALS clinic in Oklahoma City, Dr. Beeson, and I went over and saw him. He said, "Your case is really complicated, and I'm glad you've got an appointment with Dr. Pastrong because it's complicated." He had been John's ALS doctor, so we knew each other already, and it just was very, very exasperating to have to wait that long to go to St. Louis. We did go then on to that, and it was a 7.5-hour appointment, and it was test after test after test. They took 24 vials of blood. I mean, it was just electric, where they run electric shocks down your arms and legs and did every test you can imagine to make sure what the diagnosis would be. And they came back a couple of weeks later and said, "We're 92% sure it's ALS.
How did they tell you that?
They called me.
The diagnosis was on a phone call.
Yes.
You're 92%.
Right.
Well, that's the same as saying 100, isn't it?
Well, no, there's 8% there, John. I held out for, you know, maybe. Then they wanted me to come back, and I did a follow-up exam in July, and then they included 100%.
Let me take you back to when you first noticed your left leg. Did you think, "Oh, no, this could be ALS"?
When I started feeling the muscle twitching, that's when I put the two together and went, "Oh, no."
How scary that had to be.
Yeah, it was. And particularly, ALS is a rare disease to start with, and to have two people from the same household to have a disease that they don't really know what causes it, it was astounding. It was interesting. My daughter-in-law, who does a lot of healthcare work in New York City, started researching articles on the rarity of two people that are not related in the same household having ALS. And she said the best article I found was published by the Baylor School of Medicine in 2011. And it was written by a Tulsa neurologist, John DeWitt. And I said, "Well, not only do I know John DeWitt, but I have an appointment with him this afternoon because I'm working on his residence." So I went over and talked to John. He said, "It's off the charts rare." He said, "I did the research and wrote the article because I had a couple here in Tulsa that were diagnosed 6 years apart that weren't genetically related, a husband and wife."
We're talking 1-2% probably.
It's incredibly rare that that would happen. There's about 5,500 cases diagnosed in the United States every year out of 300 million. It's a very, very small percentage of the population.
Affecting certain ages?
Stephen Hawking was 21 when he was diagnosed. I know a gentleman here in Tulsa that was diagnosed at 30, and he passed when he was 33 with small children. Then I know people that are diagnosed in their 70s as well. So it's all over the age range.
So how old were you when you were diagnosed?
65.
65 years old. How has it progressed? Is slowly affecting more than just your left leg?
Yes. It started with my left leg. I fell numerous times. It just caught me off guard, and at Hay Falls, I was walking down Lexington Avenue in New York City on 47th Street. I was too busy looking at people and buildings and missed a crack in the pavement and fell flat on my face right in the middle of New York. Then I noticed within the last 3 or 4 months, my right leg was becoming affected, so I had to quit driving because we use our right leg, you know, for driving. So I had to quit driving, relying on the kindness of friends, and I do have someone now who's helping me with that. It's also affected my left arm. It's much, much weaker than it used to be, and typing is an issue. I can point a finger on my left hand, but that's really all, so I use my right hand and point with my left hand to try to type on a keyboard.
So when you see this progression, how do you handle that?
One of my favorite quotes is Abraham Lincoln's quote, "People are about as happy as they make up their minds to be." I'm extremely grateful for a wonderful, wonderful life, and I'm extremely appreciative of friends and colleagues, and I just have made my mind up that I'm going to be happy and be grateful. So if it progresses, it progresses. It'll be what it'll be.
The natural question is ask about depression. Do you get depressed?
No, I haven't had that issue.
Never get in a funk, as we say.
I just haven't had that experience because I just choose to be happy.
Since you were with John through this journey of ALS, and now you have it, what did you learn from watching him?
Well, I learned that it does require caregiving constantly. For instance, at this point, I can sit in a chair, but I can't get up from one. So I have to have someone who has some upper body strength and knows the technique on how to lift me. Wes, for instance, has learned how to lift me out of a chair. Even such things as rolling over in bed, I don't have the muscle strength to do that. So I have to be pushed and pulled and just simple things of that nature. I have to have someone with me 24/7. If, for instance, he needs to go to take care of something or be gone for 4 or 5 hours, that's no problem. I just sit in a chair during that time. Or a friend comes over. You know, there's ways of handling that. But there's a point where I'm going to have to get up and use the restroom or whatever, use the urinal most of the time at this point, obviously. And we have equipped the townhouse with handicap rails and all kinds of equipment.
You ever thought, I lived watching John, and then I was zapped with the very same thing. And with all that knowledge I have it, how cruel that seemed to have been.
It's unusual. It's very rare that this happens, but I'm not the first case, certainly. But again, John, I just choose to be happy. I choose to make the most of it and just celebrate every day of my life. Whatever I have left, I want to celebrate.
About Wes, everybody who meets him, he's such an engaging, nice personality, and lots of warmth. We see that in him immediately. He has been a tremendous help for you.
Without question, without question. You know, I tell him this constantly, I don't know what I'd do without you. Because he's the way I get out of bed and get into bed and get out of a chair and get up and do anything.
For those who don't have a partner like that, or by themselves, they have to hire 24-hour help. And
exactly.
He's nearly that, isn't he?
Yes. Plus, I do have a caregiver during the day, Monday through Friday.
A party was held for you at Philbrook.
Yes.
Talk about that.
One of my dear clients and friends said, I want to host a party. And I said, okay. Anyway, basically, she sent out extraordinary invitations, and we had 350 people that responded positively. And I had people from Denver, from St. Louis, various cities, and my sons came in from New York and Georgia for the party.
And I was in attendance there.
You were the master of ceremonies.
You selected me, and I was very honored that you did that. Many people spoke to you privately, but then were those who got up on stage and talked to you. It had to be so meaningful for you.
Absolutely. I knew that I couldn't speak because I couldn't emotionally handle that. Lots of tears shed that evening.
And most of us couldn't gather 300 people together about ourselves. But you did, and all of us will remember that party for the rest of our lives.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I was very honored, to say the least.
It was quite a spread, and it should have been there because of what you did and meant for Philbrook.
It was a great honor, to say the least.